Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of Into the Blue Zone, a plant-based production. On today's episode, we have special guest Mike Stevenson, court sport professional here at the Landings Club, and my very lovely mother, Simone Heyman. You guys could just wait for the camera. Awesome. Today's episode, we're going to focus on nutrition, a little bit of tennis, and how what we put into our body affects how we perform. And Mike, you seem to have a plethora of knowledge. And Mom, you have an amazing flair for in the kitchen. And you're also quite the athlete as well, as we've played pickleball, tennis, and golf together the last few days. So I'm excited to kind of spread the word, share some wisdom, and hopefully we can impact one person. That's kind of been an ongoing theme. If one person's listening to the podcast, if we could just impact one person, that would be a success. So thanks so much for taking time out of your day and joining the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And it's one person at a time. And if we help a second person, that's more the better.
Awesome. So Mike, you have been at the Landings for a few years now, and you played college tennis?
I did. I played college tennis at Frostburg State University out in Western Maryland. They were Division III at the time. Now they're Division II. I mean, maybe we helped them do that. I don't know.
like to think so.
And then I played some prize money tennis tournaments. And then during college, I got a chance to go down to Hilton Head, and that's what kind of got me acquainted with the Low Country. And then from there, that was my diving board, if you will, into the coaching world. So I started coaching. I mean, I started coaching when I was 15 and ran a couple programs up north. But then it was when I was 22 that I got introduced to like the professional world of coaching. And then I was started in Hilton Head, moved around a little bit, was in Boston for a bit, Bluffton. Mostly the Low Country the last 9 years, though.
And then you are married. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. My lovely wife, Michalina, and I'm sure we'll get into it at some point, but I might as well say it, that as I say to Simone all the time, it's nice having a partner in crime. So whatever it is that you're doing, whether you enjoy listening to certain music or you enjoy whatever, there's probably a reason you were attracted to that person, and there's probably a reason they want to stay with you when you try things. So for us, she's in the dietetics world, and the further she gets into dietetics, the more reinforcers she finds for plant-based foods and plant-based eating. But at the same time, you know, we made this decision together to do it, and it is much easier when the whole household is doing it. I have seen instances where one person out of the household tries to do it, and it's difficult for them, you know, because they quickly get, I won't say sidetracked versus on track, just they quickly just get out of the habit of eating or prepping their meals or doing whatever they need to in order to eat the way they know they should or feel their best because of, you know, the teamwork aspect. So she's awesome.
Yeah. It's been 5 years this February since being plant-based. And when I first started, I did it with a couple friends, a couple roommates. So that accountability and making it fun was right there all the time, no problem. Now they left and I have a roommate and we eat very different, and I'm kind of on the path where I've been doing it long enough where I'm not getting off the path. I totally agree that the support system, the accountability and making it fun and having ideas to bounce off someone and then to kind of create more brainstorming as to what to eat, this, that, where are we going shopping, all that. It's way easier. So I think for people who are listening, who are looking to transition to a plant-based diet or a vegan lifestyle or a healthier habit, have a support system. And lucky for you guys, you live with someone in this regard, maybe not so lucky in other instances. And it's just really important that if it's a family member or a friend or someone you could call, definitely reach out to people because it makes it more fun and way more sustainable.
Well, also our culture and most cultures revolve around food. I mean, we all need food to sustain and endure life, not just activities. It makes a difference. It's a social gathering. And we always want to nurture people when they come to our house and such. And now feeling that I'm nurturing them with more wholesome foods, authentic, real foods, because it's the basic food. It's not a processed food, even though occasionally there's some processed ingredients in some of the things. But for the most part, I didn't grind the flour, though I could go over to my Vitamix and put the quinoa flakes in to make my own quinoa flour when I can't find it in the store. But for the most part, you know, it's part of our culture in nurturing people, and how we choose to do it is through plant-based food, which is more on the fringes, and it's getting more indoctrinated into our culture, and as it has been in other cultures and such like that around the world.
And Simone, to her credit, she's that atmosphere, that fun, accessible, wholesome atmosphere that you're describing, you know, she's actively creating here at the Landings, you know, like went to one of her, several of her events, but like we've talked a lot about things and she's fostering that sense in a community aspect, like the Blue Zone aspect, or like the just getting people to try something new, you know, and see how it is with a group of people that are like-minded, fun and all that. So,
yeah, I think it's amazing how fun and social like pickleball has become, and how like people want the community. Humans crave the community, and we all want to feel good and look good, and most of us want to live long, healthy lives. And you know, Mom, great job building a community here within a community and expanding on it, and keep using all these resources and activities to host events, and you know, awesome athletes to kind of highlight, hey, like you're not going to break down and lose muscle and deteriorate. Like that was an honest thought that I had when I was like going to watch this vegan documentary, like, oh shoot, like I'm going to evaporate like the Wicked Witch of the West. That's like right. I'm going to not eat meat, and then I'm going to not be a man and not be strong.
Right.
And then you start diving in and researching, and you want to figure out like, is that all BS? Or is that truth? And then you kind of like, well, I'm working out and I'm running faster and I'm less sore and I'm eating cleaner. Like, what's going on? So then you start building these strong opinions. And, you know, I was told you don't want to be going around posting flags, defending your position everywhere you go. And at the same time, it's nice to encourage like-minded people and people who are of opposing opinions. You yeah. might be like, well, I don't really see it that way. And you could go back and forth.
Yeah, that's right. And the, you know, like you had Joe on earlier today, you know, who described everything in moderation. You know, a great phrase I heard once was just eat what your great grandparents ate or grandparents ate, you know? And I was like, because they say that part of your diet or part of your part of it is what you're actually physically putting into your body. But part of it is too, like how your body is taking adversity, whether or not, you know, your grandparents died early or whether or not their kids died early or whatever happened to them due to dietary consequences, you know, has a way of working out why you're here now. So that idea is like, if I go back and look at what my great-grandparents were eating, they didn't have money to buy, you know, the expensive meats or the expensive fishes or everything. You know, most of the diet, if you go back and you ask your, like if I asked my dad what his grandparents were eating, he'd probably say, well, you know, we had bread and we had, you know, these staple items that are all very like simple. But me personally, I've always enjoyed bread. Like I can eat like an entire baguette like in one go. And, you know, and have great energy and like and feel great about myself just because I personally love bread, you know, but not everyone can do that. But I'm just saying that like, if you go back and you look historically at what your family has eaten, there probably isn't a lot of like really expensive things in there. There's probably a lot of rice. There's probably a lot of potatoes. There's probably, for me being, you know, more on my mom's side, at least British, a lot of potatoes, a lot of bland, you know, tasteless, you know, in our case, we have more taste in our diet, but tasteless foods, but that are energy builders, like sustainers, your sweet potatoes, your regular potatoes, your, you know, they're all very nutritious foods. that they lived on because they were the best they could possibly get for, you know, the most bang for your buck, if you will. And nowadays, when everything is, you know, comparatively a lot, whole lot cheaper, we should be able to do a whole lot more in the way of like looking at those different foods and seeing what the best thing is for us, you know? So
why did you decide to go plant-based? Like, what sparked the urge to change it up?
Initially, the first time I went plant-based, I was dating a trainer, and we may have watched a documentary, I can't remember, but we just decided one day, hey, what can we do to try something new or shake things up? And that was what we chose to do. So it was kind of like maybe we watched a documentary afterwards before, I can't quite remember, but then we stumbled upon something great because we tried it. I noticed that I had, in the first time that I switched to eating plant-based, noticed that I had more energy. 2 years go by, feel great, but relationship wasn't great. So relationship stops. That harkens back to the earlier point of having a partner in crime. Now I find myself, you know, back on the dating scene, you know, and going out and meeting people and eating things and, you know, and not really watching my intake as well as I should. Still teaching tennis and still performing well, I would say, but not quite where I was before. And then with my now wife, Michalina, we decided to go plant-based. And since then, you know, I had noticed at a physical that I had like pre-hypertension. You know, if you looked at a guy like me, you'd be like, there's no way that guy has any problems, you know, because like rail thin, like, you know, seemingly very athletic, represents maybe a place in our mind of someone we want to be like on the tennis court. But I tell people all the time, that does not mean I'm in shape. And that does not mean, you know, I'm in any way maintaining any of this. Like, this could all just fall over one day and evaporate. Like you were saying, like just the Wicca Witch of the West, just completely disappear. But that goes for whether you're plant-based or not. So what plant-based eating really did for me was it took that pre-hypertension blood pressure and just completely went away. Like within 2 weeks, I think I went back and looked, and it was like, you know, way down. Resting heart rate, way down. Then what I realized for my own personal self, and this is where I think, you know, wellness coaches and dietitians and even nutritionists, people who are versed in that world, can help you out, is then when I started adding the things that I needed more of, and adding in exercise, like training for a marathon, that's really what pushed me to the point of like discovering exactly what I needed, you know, for my body, because it was forcing me to, I don't know, just look at it a little bit more carefully. And I felt a whole lot better. I mean, I can tell you from experience that running 15 miles with 4 days preceding it of just 4 days of plant-based eating is a whole lot easier than, and I'll admit that it's a lot easier than 4 days preceding it of not plant-based eating, because I've done both. So it's like, you know, and when you're training, you want to be able to rely upon some aspects of your training. Something's going to go wrong in a race like that. You know, you're going to be wearing too much clothes. You're going to need to use the restroom, whatever it is, you're going to have something go wrong, but you don't really want it to be like, at least for me, my stomach's all messed up, you know, or, you know, or something in here doesn't feel right, because then I just feel like I got to stop because I don't want to damage anything, you know, something that's irreparable. But yeah, it's tremendous what the diet can do for you. And I think that if you invest some time and some energy into researching it, you can find out that it's not a whole lot different than what you're currently doing. You're just subtracting out the daily dose of, you know, you mentioned earlier before we started that, you know, the hot dog cigarette issue. You're just taking out that daily hot dog, you know, and you're putting in an avocado or something else instead, or a smoothie. Like, I love smoothies. Like, I'm just the king of smoothies. I love making a good smoothie, putting whatever I want in there. I don't care what it tastes like. I just drink it. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Smoothies are easy. Yeah. I feel like when I'm lazy, like, and it's hot out, it's smoothie time all the time. You just throw it right in and super easy.
Well, the other day on the way to, I think a tennis match or whatever here, I said, you know, I just feel like the taste of apple pie. So in the frozen banana, I put an apple, put in cinnamon, I put in some other seasonings and put in my greens or whatever, kind of camouflage the greens. And it tastes like apple pie in the morning. And it was totally okay. It was great. I do it with pumpkin too. Put some pumpkin in a smoothie and put some pumpkin pie spice in. You don't have to have the whole pie. It just, you get that sensation. You're over it. Your taste buds have changed and it's satisfying and it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
When did you run your marathon?
That was November 6th. Yeah. Beginning of November.
Super recent.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't, like Simone was saying, they didn't let me run they didn't let anyone run the full. So like they canceled the full portion of it. And they said, because of the weather and the, you know, potential flooding in the streets. And they said, you can run the half if you want to. And I was like, yeah, like I got up at, you know, 5 a.m. I had to be dropped. Yeah.
You're like, I'm ready for the full. Like,
yeah. Oh, I only got to run halfway. Sweet. Sure, yeah.
And you're done.
Yeah. Do I still get the full medal? And they're like,
you gotta get the t-shirt.
The half.
Gotta get the 26 mile t-shirt.
That's right. And so they offered us, what they did was they offered us another marathon for free of their series of marathons. But then probably the next one I run will be out here, the Skidaway Island Marathon. So that'll be fun. That's in March.
What's the furthest you've ran? Have you ran a marathon prior? Because I want to run one and I'm getting myself geared up.
Yeah, I would say that the training program I have, and if you want me to give that to you, I can give it to you in terms of distance, is awesome. It's very, very good. I started a few weeks in on it and I was running extremely fast. Like the training, like pretty much it models your race. So like the race on Saturday, 26 miles. And to answer your question, I've never run the full 26.2. The training only goes up to about 20 mm-hmm. or 18. And then they say on race day, you know, with the other runners and the adrenaline and everything, you have what it takes to run the rest of it. They just don't want you to, basically overdo it. Like the week before, if you run a marathon, you've already done what you should have done on race day. So basically the training models your race. So the longest run is always on Saturday and you can change it however you want though. And then during the week you have like, you know, different runs and then you can supplement that with, you know, maybe some, negative splits, which are like you run the first mile 8:30, next mile 8:15, next mile 8, next mile 7:45, like things like that. You know, where you're constantly ramping up your speed or run a fast one, then a slow one, a fast one, then a slow one, and then try and find your baseline, like where you can go pretty much forever mm-hmm. at a certain pace. And so I ran the half marathon. I was really geared towards a full. So I was planning on running that between 8:15 and 8:30, a mile for each mile. And I ran 8:15 for the half for 13.1, which was pretty good.
Yeah. Nice. That's amazing. Yeah, I ran a half marathon like last year and felt good, like hour 45. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You came in right before me. I was
146. Yeah.
148. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I came out a little fast.
Yeah.
And like there were some hills in Carlsbad and like going up that last hill, I came out real fast. It's like running 740 and seven. I was like, I need to slow down.
Yeah. Pop good
lesson. Yeah. Good lesson learned though. Did you feel, so what I want to kind of get to with the food, did you feel like your soreness kind of right after the race was like, all right, you're sore. Like I felt sore. And then kind of next day, it's like little soreness.
Yeah. And partially, I think it partially has to do with my mind, like how I mind stretching all have, you know, a big impact too. But like, it was funny because my mom and dad came into town and they said to me, they were like, or they said to all of us, me, my wife, and you know, it was just us four. And they said, oh, you know, are you going to have to rest a while, you know, like afterwards? And my wife was like, no, he'll be fine. Because I've done so much. I mean, because I was training for a marathon, like I'd done a 13-mile run the week before, like on the weekend. That was my last longer run before the race. So, you know, running, going from, you know, potentially running 26 to then running 13, you know, special circumstances. So, but to your point and to answer the actual question of the podcast, all the runs I did preceding that, like the 18 milers, like, a lot of the 15s, a lot of the 10s, you know, the soreness, I think partially due to the, like, I would say committing to the diet and committing to the training are very similar. So like you commit to the diet and you get X, Y, and Z, like better, heart rate, better performance, better, you know, better everything. But in terms of the training, you're also doing the same thing. So you're training your muscles over and over again with whatever diet you're on. You know, I'm sure, like, I'm not saying a plant-based eater would be, or a meat eater would be better or worse. I'm just saying that, like, the training of both of them in tandem is what creates the good product. You know, I'd have to go back and I'd have to, like, train with a different diet and see if, like, you know, the soreness was there. But from my experience, I mean, I was running, you know, 40 miles a week in my heyday, you could say, but like adding up all the miles, and I could do it. And I could go to work. I could run around, you know, Simone would see me at work running around teaching people, and then I could go run. You know, I could leave work, go run, come back to work, teach again, go home, wake up early in the morning, run again, like kind of piecemeal my runs together and still keep up with everything, you know, and have no injuries, have no anything. So if that's not a testament to how much the diet and, you know, the training has to be there too, but the diet and the training, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. Your recovery time is much more efficient.
Yeah.
There's no downtime. I mean, I just know when I changed my diet that I lost, you know, weight without trying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just could have been started with a handful of pounds, but it really was like 10 pounds. And on a small body, you don't think I had 10 pounds to lose, but I got faster on the tennis court. My reaction time got faster, that and pickleball. And when you think about 10 pounds, 10 pounds is like the weight of a bowling ball.
Yeah.
So running around and functioning with a bowling ball on you is that's a different way to look at it, you know? So,
yeah.
And if it's 12 pounds, it's a 12 pound bowling ball. So every bit makes a difference in the strenuousness on your body and your muscles and your bones and impacting and such like that. So, next time you run the marathon, we have to, I know maybe probably Greg will run it out here too. And we'll have to get some of our plant-based, cheerleaders.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Got to get you in a plant-based production little tank top.
Yeah.
We'll do. Yeah.
There we go.
We'll happy to. Yeah.
That's next on the list. Yeah. I remember like playing soccer when I was super young and like just kind of getting out of breath, like in warmups, running laps.
Yeah.
And like I see it now with kids that I coach, and I'm sure you teach some juniors, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the correlation with the training, like you're saying, and the diet has to be there. When the diet's there, I feel like the training could go way up.
Yeah.
And you're talking about it with the marathon training. When we were shut down a couple of years ago with COVID, I was running every day and cycling every day. And because we had the time, I was able to stretch, relax, sleep in, eat well. And all these things just added up to like a machine-like performance, where for 3 months I was running 100 miles a month and 150 miles cycling. I'm like, zero soreness.
Yeah.
And it almost got easier. And then I relate back to like being a kid running around playing soccer, being out of breath, like in warmups. And I think there's a lot of people that like the blood flow is not, kids in sports, the blood flow is not pumping as much as it could be. And you're out of breath and you're sucking for air, when really you should be able to breathe maybe more through your nose. And we'll get into that and just kind of getting in more of a Zen state and understanding like how to control your breath, breathing slower and then moving faster, or, you know, breathing slower, longer breaths, or and lifting more weights or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, better diet from the kids is representative in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed versus, you know, half asleep or don't want to be there. Or, I mean, part of that's mental too, but, you know, like people who are energetic and they're ready to do things generally are putting better things in their body. You know, they're eating, you know, more vegetables, more fruits. You know, Joe mentioned his love of fruits. I mean, you know, probably top five favorite foods, strawberries. You know, love strawberries. I don't know if I could pick a favorite food, but top five are all outside of the, you know, or all outside of the meat family. You know, but you just don't, like, if you ask people to think that way, like, what are your top five foods? You know, like, sometimes people will say a steak, but very rare. I mean, I find it very rare that people say that. They're like, oh, I like, you know, some sort of casserole that's mainly like green beans or mainly something. And you're like, oh, so your favorite food is green beans. And
or it's pasta.
Like, or pasta, you know. I love spaghetti. And it's like, oh, you can very easily make a vegan spaghetti, you know, vegan meatballs. And, you know, and it's, and then again, it doesn't have to be vegan this or vegan that. It just has, or plant-based that, plant-based this or plant-based that. It just, you know, just that little bit of effort to add in the meals and then add in more and then see what's happening. Like you were saying, see what's happening to your taste buds, see what's happening to your performance, see what you're able to do. You know, like to your point, like when I was younger, you know, I mean, I was playing a lot of sports, but I mean, I feel like I can play tennis better now than I ever could, you know,
physically, not just mentally, physically. Not just better mentally and experienced. You're physically,
physically better,
more durable,
physically more durable, or at least, and this is still a testament to plant-based, or at least the same as I was at 22. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I do my health screening here at the club, they're like, you're a 23-year-old. Like it says, like after you're done all your screening tests, it says you're 23. And I'm like, fist bumping. I'm like, sweet. Let's go. I've got 7 or 8 years to,
to burn. I'm in my 50s, and that's great too. I'll take that.
And I think the age is going to expand. As you get older, you're going to keep going down.
Right. Oh, like and you, I'm not,
the
I'm
gaps,
not, I'm not,
the gap's going up.
I want to say it to the camera. I'm not 23, by the way. I'm 31, about to be 32. So I'm going
age.
The opposite way.
Okay, same age. We're
both 31 and probably feeling like we're in our 20s still. And I know I look like I'm 21. And
yeah. And since I shaved, probably 21 as well.
Yeah.
Hey guys, you could do a little bit to gain a lot there in your age.
What are your top five? You mentioned strawberries, and maybe we could just go around and share our top five kind of foods. And I feel like you and I are both viewing it more from performance and efficiency along with just taste, maybe. I put berries definitely in the top five. Mm-hmm. And I also put kale and I'm going to say greens, specifically kale, arugula in the top five, and then potatoes. So purple potatoes, sweet potatoes, regular potatoes, those are like staples for me that if someone's like, I'm like, just eat as much as you can of those three things.
Yeah, I would be bread, as I've already mentioned, is like way up there. Bread.
You know, my dad has become like a master bread maker, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So he's like making more bread than probably any other guy here on the landings.
Got to go to Rich for the sandwich.
Yeah. we have a lot of good avocado, whatever.
Some rye bread, semolina, some
cranberry
bread,
nut bread. And we made a traditional white bread for my brother-in-law. And he says, oh my God, this is an awesome bread. So for my husband to teach my brother-in-law, and he got to use my fresh brand new hand mixer, electric hand mixer for the first time kneading his dough. I go, I can't believe you're using my new appliance to make bread. And I haven't even gotten to use it yet.
Next thing you know, you'll be getting the twofer, the, what do they call those? When like, if I bought, like, or if Rich in this case bought you a gift that he really wanted to use, you know, so you'll be getting those, you'll be getting those gifts, you know, like for Christmas, and they'd be like, oh, you know, can I borrow that sometime?
Yeah, back to bread. Definitely go to Rich, my dad, for bread.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put in a request. He'll to make it for you.
He'll fire it up.
The only trouble is it just gets a little bit, you know, heavier as the week goes on, as you have to finish the bread in a couple days because it's the best when it's fresh. You know?
Oh, I'll eat it, and I'll eat it between when I get it from him and probably
on your here own, at the club. You could afford to get away with it. I can't afford to get away with it.
There's like no survivors when it comes to bread, bagel, you know, anything that's bread. It's.
I like bread in my top five too.
And then I would say I would agree with you on the not agree or disagree. I would also put in there potatoes. Love potatoes.
What kind and how?
I've got those British underneath my current taste buds are those very British taste buds. So I've got like just a plain baked potato. I could eat
russet potato.
Yeah.
Got it.
I could eat it every day. No problem.
Okay. Well, we're going to be using russet potatoes tonight because I'm making latkes, which are potato pancakes without the egg, without frying it in the oil. Yes. Not using the traditional oil, oven baking it. And they come out just fine because I don't want all that oil flavor on my mouth. I don't want it coating the lining of my mouth. And it's very hard to get rid of because it just kind of sits there. And this way we get to eat that and enjoy it and still feel like we're partaking in tradition. So we just have new tradition recipes. That's all.
Yeah. Excellent. And then tied for third would have to be your greens family, with broccoli being at the top of I love broccoli, being at the top of that for me, but tied with your berry group. I mean, I love berries. I love tropical. They have like a tropical mix of fruit at Sam's Club that I enjoy for smoothies. It's like a mangoes, pineapples, strawberries, something else. But, you know, I'm just throwing that in the whatever kind of mixer we have and blending it up.
That works.
With a protein. Comes out good every time.
Yeah, maybe a Orgain. I use like the Orgain protein powder. Mm-hmm. I put that in and then blend it up, and it's delicious every time.
Yeah. There's some friends of mine, and it's like not every, and you hear this a lot, not every diet is the same. No two people are the same. And, you know, we all have different thumbprints, and, you know, you're 6'7", I'm 5'8". Like at the end of the day, we're all pretty similar.
Yeah.
Like if we're 7 feet or 4 feet, like we all kind of look similar. And I'm not going to say like that strawberry is the same effect on you as it is on you. Although like if you're not eating any berries or any greens, like we need to be eating them. And sometimes you have to cook the spinach or cook the kale. Sometimes you have to like boil the potato or bake it and not fry it. There's all these little subtleties in how people react and get affected through food, and like we're kind of going back and forth, like trial and error. Like if you eat meat, like I had meat at a buddy's wedding in Mexico a couple summers ago, and I think my extreme approach, I like guilted myself into having the meat. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of gave myself the pass on this week, and I ate like lobster and steak, and I was so full and like bloated. Maybe because I ate so much, guilting myself into not eating it down the road, which is effective.
Yeah, very.
I ate so much that I couldn't drink any like alcohol, which was beneficial. I couldn't get hungover, but I felt so bloated and like full. And it was just really, you know, an eye opener. And like, yeah, maybe the kale needs to be cooked for you. Maybe raw kale makes you too gassy or it's too powerful. And then, you know, I had a podcast with a woman who is plant-based, and her name's Liz Murphy. And she said she can't eat anything raw. Like she's got some stuff going on. And I'm like, I love raw things. Like the less cooked, the better it seems for me. So I just don't, I like that there's the five things that I think we should be eating, maybe 10, maybe 20, maybe 100 or 200, like Colin Campbell suggests that we should eat as much diversity as possible. And then there's kind of the staples. You know, it's like we need to exercise, we need to breathe, we need to be stimulated, and then we need to eat, you know, some of these things.
Yeah.
And then how you prepare them and how often and how you use them in moderation, that depends on your own body and your own performance.
Exactly.
Yeah, like I love nuts, but if I put just a few on my, you know, either my Keto yogurt or a few in my oatmeal, just has to be a few. It doesn't have to be lots. And depending on what you are, I mean, if you burn up a lot, maybe you need more fat. That's, you know, go for a handful of nuts, you know, every time you need a snack. But I just need a few just to satisfy that crunch factor, because we don't have, if you're eating raw vegetables, you get a good crunch factor. But if you cook the vegetables and you have a lot of cooked food, especially in the winter, if it's colder months and such like that, you're cooking more food. We need a little crunch to satisfy our chewing, I think. I find that, you know, I don't have much to crunch into, you know, to that's crispy or whatever. But apples are great and some other fruits are great. You don't get the crunch factor with berries. So you got to change that up a little bit.
And to your point, the nuts, I mean, that was kind of, you know, everyone is a little bit different, you know, and certainly when you're describing how much of anything to eat. And with the nuts, you know, they were kind of my secret to not taking too much weight off. You know, like I was down, I got down at one point to like maybe around like 175, something like that. And for my frame, you know, that's a little too much weight off. And that was because it had nothing to do with being plant-based. It just had to do with not researching and not getting the items that I needed and as much as I needed throughout the day. So nuts were a huge fat source for me. And so now, like you said, put them in your oatmeal, you know, put them in a, I like a milk called Ripple, as I told you. And it's like, it's become pretty popular, out on the freeway. It says nut milk is not milk. Right. And I remember my wife and I saw that and we're like, yeah, it is. It's just from a nut. It's just, you know, so we experiment with all the nut. I really enjoy oat milk. I really enjoy almond milk. I mean, I know that's a slightly different topic, but like the nut world is something, I mean, I hate peanuts. I'll just say that. Like they, for whatever reason, I mean, I can eat a raw peanut, but like the peanut buttery type taste or that smell takes my stomach and just turns it over. And it always has since I was a little kid, and I don't know what it is, but all, like I'll say like to people who on the camera who don't like peanuts or peanut butter, try almond butter, try like the other nuts, because you're missing out on a whole world. Like, cause peanut seems to be like the, you know, if we were taught like the entry, like they say about entry drugs, you know, and this is the entry into the bad world of nuts, you know? And it's like, if you get into peanuts, now you're going to get into almonds, and then you're not going to be eating or you're not going to be drinking milk or eating meat. But like really, almonds and all those things, like delicious walnuts, love walnuts.
You know? There's pumpkin butter too, by the way.
Pumpkin butter. I see. Yeah, pumpkin learn something
seed
new every day.
Pumpkin seed butter. Yeah.
I mean, pumpkin seeds are great.
Yeah, I do. Protein. And they're very high. Yeah, very high. Yeah. Just grind them up.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I want to touch on while we're kind of getting deep into the food is carbohydrates. And I feel like there's a very strong myth that carbs are bad. And I studied through the University of Cornell. It's the E. Cornell Nutrition Studies certificate I got. Again, Colin Campbell, who I'm quoting, who was raised on a dairy farm and authored the biggest nutrition study ever conducted, the China study. Colin Campbell goes on to say, in the class that I took, your diet breakdown of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins should be 80% carbs, which seems astronomically backwards from what everyone is being told, especially maybe females who are trying to lose weight, not to gender, you know, specific anyone. I feel like, oh, stay away from carbs. And you're over here like, bread's amazing. Bread's great for me. And I'm like, yeah, like oats, any carbs for long lasting energy, as long as they're whole carbs and they're basically organic, natural, carbs are great. Like 80% seems like a very high number that's being suggested by someone who's studied food his whole life. And again, through trial and error and experimentation, I've been eating a lot more bread recently, and it has not affected me negatively. Where, again, if you're like cutting and you're trying to get as fit as possible, like you're trying to probably eat less bread. That's not the most, like, that's not how you're living day to day, though. That's for like a short stint of a crash diet or whatever they're called. So, I mean, you're living it, you're eating bread. And I just want people to kind of listen that like good carbs are good for us. They're our main fuel source, according to Colin Campbell. And I think it's important that we kind of straighten out that Wonder Bread and processed bread and kind of more processed, you know, mac and cheese or whatever is very different than whole rice and whole bread and whole corn tortillas.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with just the name of the podcast, Blue Zone, right? It's not so much a diet, it's how you eat, which I feel like is different from, let's say, a diet. But people all around the world, you know, want the quick solution. They also want the solution that's the path less traveled, or like like my dad has always had an expression that I probably shouldn't say on here, but he said, oh, you know, you mean like fork to mouth disease, like you can't like physically stop yourself from eating too much food. But that's like what my dad always said growing up. And maybe I do have a stigma towards, I know some people have issues that lead to, you know, being overweight, but also there are a lot of things you can do in terms of exercise. Now, once you get to a certain point of non-exercise, it becomes much harder to come back, you know? So these diets, I think, and like what you're suggesting from the carb heavy diet, these diets, they're trying to shortcut the process by essentially starving yourself of the nutrients you need. Like there's no way I could run the distances that I was running or be on the court all day without carbs, you know, without lots of carbs. You know, I would go for runs. I went for an 18 mile run that I did faster than I did an 18 mile run at a 7:15 pace. And I killed it. Felt like a machine. Was eating, you know, well, you know, months in advance, you know, just crushed the run. And it's all about the, you know, the person. There's a personal element to it, I think, like what your body needs. But I look down at that, you know, that very nice smartwatch, and it says, you know, you just burned like, you know, according to a box of cereal, when it says, you know, based on a 2000 calorie diet, you just burned 3,100 calories in one run. You know, there's no way you could do that, you know, by not having, you know, a day and a half's worth of carbs. You know, like you have to have that going in. So to tell people, to get on and tell people, oh, all you got to do is eat this way and you'll be your ideal weight. I mean, yeah, there's definitely some truth to it. Eating, like you said, you lost 10 pounds right away. There's definitely some truth to it eating plants, because you're not, you know, blocking your arteries. You're not like doing all these things that are working against you. But at the same time, you have to add in, you know, exercise. You have to do your research like you did and see like, well, what are people actually who study this for a living? What are they actually saying about what these nutrients are giving you? You know, if having a whole bunch of carbs in your diet is bad for that particular person, okay. But holistically, like you said, it's just simply not the facts. You know, like people need to know that you need carbs to perform. It's what your body burns. You know, there's a reason professional runners have like a spoonful of honey before they run, because it's a quick jolt of carbs. You know, it's like it's right to you. It hits you right away, and you can just go. I use like honey-based products usually for runs, long distance runs. You know, there's these little graham crackers you can eat that are super they're a lot better for me than like the gels. The gels kind of bother me sometimes, but the little crackers are great, and you just eat them and like your mouth doesn't like, you don't get all that moisture from the gel, and it's just, it's packed with honey and you can taste it and you can feel it. Like you can feel your muscles get like a, you know, just like this shooting sense of like, oh, thanks. You know, thanks for giving
getting
us
that bathed in honey, yeah, right? Yeah. Type of thing, which is plant-based, not vegan. So there's a distinction between those two schools of eating and such like that. Though the Olympic athletes come with their own cans of beets to the Olympics because of the power and the energy and the sweetness and the fiber and all of the good stuff that are contained there that they can't find when they go to many of the countries, because a lot of them are clamoring for, you know, the fuel that they need. And it's interesting because, you know, people here think, okay, I got to build muscle with animal protein and, you know, they keep building that and building that. And that's not how gorillas, that's not how giraffes and rhinoceros and hippopotamus and elephants get their nutrients, is from, you know, other animals. They get it from all the plants that are in their environment, as long as the humans stay away from them and don't exploit them. So it's just, you know, we're just another level of animal, and we can sustain ourselves with all those other natural growing products. And
to that point, I do think that part of the gains you get when you're training on more of a meat heavy chicken and rice sort of diet, part of those gains, at least initially, are probably due to inflammation. You know, like plant-based eating, your everything you get is lean and it's strong, you know, and there's a reason why, you know, a lot of the top climbers in the world, or a lot of the people that have what I like to call true body strength, you can do like 12 wide grip pull-ups. Like for a while I was really into military type exercises just to see if I could do them. Initially, no, but just doing activities that like seem applicable in the real world. You know, can I like pull myself up, you know, 15 times? You know, that seems like it should be doable if I work at it, or if I, you know, I'm eating right and all that stuff, and much easier on a plant-based diet. You know, like when I was eating meat, I don't know if it was the mental, the psychology of it, but you feel yourself gravitating more towards like the free weight section and the bench press more so than like the, I don't know, you just enter this different place where, you know, you get to meet the climbers and the runners and the people that are trying to do something incredible with their bodies, but at the same time are extremely healthy, you know, and are living a long time. So definitely a different area of the gym, I would say.
And also, aren't marathon runners usually having a bowl of pasta the night before their runs? I mean, that's the typical thing. I don't think they're typically having a steak or a Whopper or, you know, all the burger stuff or the imitation burger stuff now that's gotten popular. It compared to what? It's better than maybe some of the animal product, though it's not the cleanest out there. And there's some other options that you mm-hmm. can compensate with and replace to achieve the same texture, the same flavors and seasoning. Just takes another step of action to get there.
Right. And I appreciate everything that they're doing nationwide and worldwide to like, you know, like we talked about, try and make things more accessible in terms of how they're presented. But at the same time, like all your raw food eating, Skylar, is like, I mean, that's where it's at. You know, just picking up, you know, an apple, picking up whatever it is and just eating it, you know, eating raw. I have, you know, little jars at home just full of different nuts, just eating raw nuts. You know, that's the true magic of it, because taste buds change over time. But also, you know, you're not eating something that still may be a little processed, you know, like you talk about, like, you know, like they're trying to make things more like impossible meats and things, which are great. And, you know, but like, if I'm going to transition to being a plant-based eater, I want part of the understanding to be, I am going to be more like the gorilla, you know, I'm going to be eating these vegetables all the time. And that's going to be my sort of how I live my life, as opposed to, you know, everything's exactly the same, except now I have, you know, maybe the Impossible Burger or the I don't know, for breakfast, I don't have Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I have like, you know, I don't know, some other name of a plant-based Cinnamon Toast Crunch. You know what I mean? It's not all substitutes. It's like, I'm just going to like try something different, you know?
I think that's a really important message, trial and error, experimentation.
Yeah.
You know, if you're afraid to do something different and change and you have a little more of a closed mindset, then your growth, your rate of growth and your ceiling you're putting on yourself is a lot lower. And, you know, if you're trying to run 10 miles and you ate really crappy, or you're trying to lift, you know, 245 pounds on the bench press and you're like barely doing it, well, go try it again instead of getting discouraged and change up your lifestyle and your diet. And, you know, the lifestyle is so important and it's starting to get clearer for me as I continue to live it, like flying cross country, going through an airport. When you first start changing the way you diet, you're going and you're looking for this like hot burrito that's vegan or the Impossible Burger. And then you keep flying and you keep eating vegan. And you're like, I just want some pistachios and a banana. Like, it's easy. I know what I'm getting. And food is not the priority of this day. And maybe it's reading or listening or talking to people on the phone. The lifestyle, I think, in the airport is a really good example that people can relate to, because the convenience that you're talking about and the accessibility is limited in certain areas of the country. And all the airports are pretty similar. Some are nicer. Some have more food. They all have the little quick marts and they all have their burger stand, you know, McDonald's and Burger King's and donuts and Sbarro's and all the general pizza burger spot. And then there's really no like high-end gourmet plant-based vegan section. So stop looking for that, because it's not there. And that's okay.
All right.
You start understanding the lifestyle is not about food today. The lifestyle is about traveling, being at ease with surrendering while you're on the plane. And while you're going through security, you basically have no control and you have to be okay with that. And then the food is like, all right, I'm going to pick up something, or I'm just not going to eat. Like, I didn't eat my whole flight out here. I got up at 5, 6 a.m., flew across country and got in at 6 and ate at 7. So, you know, you just start learning, like, I'm sure we could talk about fasting and meditation and all that stuff that embodies being in the plant-based vegan world. And, you know, it'd be nice if we had a Thanksgiving at some point where it wasn't like, oh, there's the vegan food and here's the plant-based food and it's just all food. And like all the labels were thrown out the door when you walked in. It's like, oh, this food looks great. Instead of like, oh, that's vegan whipped cream. Yeah. That's regular whipped cream. Like, it all tastes like crap anyways. It's all way too sweet. When you start eating berries and celery and stuff, it's just your taste buds change and you start flying and you're like, I'm not going to eat, or I'm just going to drink this and I'll be good. So,
well, you bring your almond butter sandwich. You know, there you go. So now I know when I invite you over and I make my homemade peanut butter cups that I'm going to make my homemade almond butter cups for you. Yes. So.
And you'll just pack him a loaf of bread when he has to fly. Yeah, you'll have a whole loaf of bread with you.
That's the power of sharing, I guess. Yeah. I have the almond butter cups and the, yeah, exactly. And the bread ready to go.
What is your favorite meal with you guys in the house? You and Michalina? Ooh,
yeah.
What's your favorite couple meals that like go-tos?
I told her, cause she does most of the, like if I'm training and if I'm doing something, I'll maybe prepare some things. And I try to do some things on the weekends for us, but usually during the week I'm pretty busy. And she's not working at the moment. So she was like, well, you know, I'll have food ready for you when you get home, you know, which is very nice of her to do. Makes my life easier, or I'm able to do more out here, you know, than I usually would be able to. But she's favorite meal by far is like a, I told you about it already, is that butternut squash with like, it's a butternut squash. And I don't know, like I've actually, this is bad knowledge of mine, but a butternut squash is hollow already or has some hollow?
Yes, that has some hollowness in it, right? Where the seeds are. Yeah, the seeds
okay,
are
so
has
she
like
takes,
a little pocket. Yeah.
She takes that out and then fills it with like a, you could say like a spinach and artichoke dip, except it's a spinachy KLE mixture with then the cream coming from, I'm sure, a similar process that you use for some creams from like a food processor, you know, and she bakes the, I think she bakes, yeah, she does it separate. So she bakes the squash, puts the mixture inside the squash, and you eat the whole thing. And it's like, oh, it's just so good. Just thinking about it. But I told her recently, I was like, not to sound corny, but, and you should never say that if you don't want to sound corny, but I said, not to sound corny, but my favorite vegan restaurant is you. You know, when you make food and I come home and you've made it, like, this is it. This is like a highlight. It could be the highlight of my day. You know, no offense to anybody I've taught, but it could be like I get home and I see this. I mean, highlight as in food, you know, not as in people.
Absolutely. Listen, I would love to come home to a lovely homemade meal. And it's usually, you know, something that I've had to prepare beforehand so I can get in and just heat it up. It's just like awesome, because Richard would say the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, to be able to come home and have this food in my house. You know, I just transitioned from how I used to cook and my ingredients, you know, and use a little tahini instead of olive oil and makes it all yum. Or my Caesar dressing that Skylar put together yesterday. And I forgot, oh yeah, I forgot to put this with the Luciano kale. That's awesome, you know, while you're making, reheating up dinner again, you know.
All right, what else besides the butternut squash? Because people are listening, and a common thing I get is like, I don't know what to eat. And it's kind of like the closed-minded, like you feel like you've eaten steak and chicken all this time and you just have a brain fart and you don't know what to eat. So
I think like in terms of quantity, like that butternut squash one is a good one because you can make a lot of the filling. You can make a lot of the squashes, bake them, make the filling, put them in your refrigerator, save them. We eat them days after. I mean, not if I'm home, but not. but then you've got all your pan type dishes that are good for days after. Like she does like a pan of enchiladas, vegan enchiladas. She does a pan of like vegan or plant-based very good lasagna. Okay. You know, so she does the lasagna pan. And those types of dishes are very portionable, you know, like you can just cut out what you're having for dinner. It's nice and hot when you eat it. You know, maybe leave it out for a little bit to let it cool off, put the cover on it, put it in the refrigerator, get it out the next day. What's for lunch? Oh, I hope it's that lasagna from last night.
It's even better,
you know?
That day.
You know, and absolutely. Then the flavors have kind of like, because of the refrigeration, they've kind of like all mixed together and it's twice as good. So any of those types of dishes, the enchiladas she makes are very good. She makes, what else do we usually have? Well, she does her fair share of trying to do like a burger or trying to do with either the Impossible Meats or the Beyond Burger. She tries to, like we currently, I saw in the freezer the couple times I've opened it since she's been, when I go for the berries for the smoothie, I opened it and I saw the patty of Impossible Meat. So, you know, she does do like burgers and stuff. She uses the meat sometimes for tacos and things like that. So she doesn't just use it for what it's intended for. She'll chop it up, put it in like a taco mix. We usually have Taco Tuesdays. You know, that's like a plant-based meat, a bunch of veggies, avocado, stuff to put on it. That's really good. What else?
Little creativity goes a long way. It's like you just take anything that's left over from the smoothie or the sweet potato and kind of blend it up and put something to it to make it stick, and it's like a patty.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I never did this before. Yeah. And it's like, I eat so much all the time. How have I never tried this? Do you guys ever go like full rabbit food or just like pick like just we don't feel like making anything and like kind of get lazy and just have like fruit, smoothie, bread, and just kind of like keep it really simple.
You ever heard of the emergency bowl? So it's like when you're in a plant-based or a vegan emergency, right? So you like, you look around and you're like, okay, I don't have, you know, any of my usual stuff together that I need to make anything, or I feel like I'm in a corner. You know, Simone could probably find her way out quickly, but I'm in a corner. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So your challenge is to just create a bowl of whatever. So like maybe you have some oatmeal and you throw some oatmeal in the bowl and you put some boiling water in or whatever, and you throw in some, I don't know, maybe some nuts or whatever the combination is. You just try and piece together. You're going through the refrigerator and all you can find is like spinach. So you chop that up and try and make that a part of the dish. That's a fun one to try.
That's my every day.
That's my every day.
My every day is an emergency bowl. I don't really shop for like, oh, what am I going to make? What meal? Like I don't do any recipes. I'm on my own single and it's just like, all right, I'm going to buy a lot of beans, a lot of oats, pasta, and just peppers, have an avocado, slice a tomato, and keep it really simple.
Yeah, if you need any oats, we have tons. We have tons of
love oats. I think oats are a staple of the brunch, lunch. I try to prolong eating.
Yeah.
I usually don't wake up super hungry, probably because I eat too much at night. So I got to kind of balance that out. Moderation, right? Joe, that one's for you.
Yeah, and I can't eat early either.
I love breakfast food, but I can't digest and run around and play tennis or pickleball and digest at the same time. It was a learning experience. I just like, I love eating breakfast food, but I have to get up way too early to have it happen because I can't eat right away, even though I could be hungry. But a smoothie is kind of like pre-digested. It's kind of broken down and kind of fills the void, and especially if you're going to 11 o'clock or something like that. Though Dad pulled out, my husband pulled out and stuff the other day and put together the salad with quinoa and vegetables and leftover Brussels sprouts and this and that. And it was a simple fig balsamic dressing that I made by reducing the balsamic and with figs that I took from my neighbor's tree. And she gave them to me that I went and picked. And it was just delicious. And I said, I could have put some sweet potatoes that I had left over in it. And that could be a dinner. That could be a lunch. It could be. And it's amazing because it's nothing that I would have put together before I ate like this, because I'd be looking for something else. But when you put this all together and you put the pumpkin seeds in and whatever else, it was delicious. And my husband did it. There was no cooking involved. When somebody goes, I don't cook. Yes, you do eat. You can gather things from the refrigerator and still make it work and feel good about it.
And I will say, you know, there's a lot of like, to you looking at the camera now, to you people looking to get into plant-based eating, like the recipes are not like, you know, you can follow Skylar's recipe, of course, which is whatever's there. But if you do want to follow a recipe, the recipes are not complicated. They're not. I mean, if I can do it, literally, if I can do it, anybody can do it. You know, like I mentioned that No Meat Athlete, you know, stuff that I, or that book that I follow. I mean, it's like, you know, you need this, and this. And my wife will come over and be like, have that. All I need is like a bunch of sweet potatoes. All I need is like, you know, whatever the ingredient is, and then toss it all together in a pot. And it's like this, you know, sweet potato something, you know, or whatever the recipe calls for, whatever it is. It's very quick. It's very simple. Sometimes you need to heat stuff up. Sometimes it's good raw. Sometimes, you know, you can do it a variety of ways. It's so much simpler to me than if someone said to me, hey, can you cook scrambled eggs? I'd be like, yeah, I guess, you know, and like, you'd have to like, yeah, but you have to actually have to cook it and watch it and like, wait. For me, my experience with plant-based eating, and I know you're more experienced, but like I said, if I can do it, anybody can. If I was making like the lasagna in the pan, you know, I have to make the filling, like the substitute for ricotta cheese. But then besides that, you know, I'm layering out however I do the pasta and everything, and then I'm putting in the sauces and the vegetables and everything. And then it goes in the oven and I bake it. And it's like, to me, it's so much easier than other ways, like other things that aren't plant-based to cook, you know, like whether you have to time the meat or check the temperature and everything like that. There are some of those things in plant-based eating, but I just feel like it's easier to cook for me.
And prepare. It's not all about cooking, because with the no boil lasagna noodles, right? You just layer it up. You can put all the vegetables you want in. One time I made a lasagna and I just used sweet potatoes and regular potatoes and vegetables and whatever else. There were no noodles, and I had people over for company and ate it, you know? So it's, you know, it's a mindset. And somebody goes, oh, it's so extravagant. No, it's healthy. I can use a healthy jarred sauce. I can use some other things. It doesn't have to be as complicated as I may have or intricate as I do sometimes, because I want to have those flavors. But sometimes it can be scrambled tofu with some black salt that makes it taste like eggs, because it imparts that sulfur flavor, and put those leftover vegetables in and boom, done. It can be done. So
Simone's got all the tricks.
Yeah.
I have a lot of tricks. I have a lot of tricks, so feel free to tap in.
Yeah. Let's transition for a real quick sec on kind of your coaching and your full-time job, because we both coach, and Joe, who we had on the show earlier, coaches. What do you love about coaching?
I'd say the best part of coaching is showing somebody something and they don't do it quite the way you would do it, but it works for them, and you see that spark or that piece, maybe that piece that's fun to them, and they just like latch on and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. But like, I like making things fun, but like that little piece of it, for whatever reason, has always stuck out to me as an important piece, where they're like, they're not quite doing it the way I would, but they're doing it really well, you know? And it's like, oh, if, you know, I never thought about doing that way. Like what a lot of people misunderstand about coaching, I think, is that I'm simply just giving all this information to a kid, and they're taking the information and either using it, not using it, or whatever. But what's really interesting is that they're giving me a lot of information. You know, I'm coaching them, and through coaching a kid, I'm getting to understand him, her, all their friends. I'm getting to understand the dynamic. I'm getting to understand like how the best way to approach the situation is, how the best way to coach this particular kid is. It's a very rewarding atmosphere. I'm sure a lot like a classroom, a traditional like teaching classroom, but it's dynamic, because you're moving around, you're saying, hey, try this, or maybe you're stepping in and demonstrating something. Maybe you're doing a demo with another pro, and whatever it is, you're just trying to give them that bit of, you know, shock and awe, or that little bit of, you know, oh, like, you know, this is what Coach Mike says, or this is what this coach says, you know, playing off one another, using other coaches' tips. It's very rewarding, very fun.
Yeah. I like kind of reinventing myself. Like, you could be a total hard ass to one practice or one person, and like, no, no, no. And maybe they could take it. Maybe that's why you are. And then to someone else, you could be like this totally nice, like happy guy, or to that same person. And you could just kind of change and keep them on their toes, or keep them, you know, engaged with your teaching. Yeah. I guess it depends how long you work with a group or an individual, because it gets a little stale, and you got to like, hey, you're really good. Like, I can't teach you much more. You just got to keep going. There's a couple kids that are like 15 that I'm teaching, and I'm like, you're good. Like, you're not that tall. I can't make you grow taller. Like, just keep playing. And I mean, we'll keep training, but there's kind of like, sometimes I have this one kid who I'm thinking of, and he's like, he's good. And I'm like, well, we've worked a ton, like for the last 2 years. And
so next
time, you just got to keep playing. You got to work out now. You got to eat healthier. Like, there's all these.
Take him to that level. Take him to that level of his development. Yes.
And then when you get to that level of that connection with the family or the student or the athlete, you're able to kind of break through those barriers that are a little more taboo to approach right away. And then when you really get into the kind of their lifestyle and you start seeing the changes go up, I think that's pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when I tell you to do one thing on the tee box and you smash, she had like 14 or 15 drives, all of them good. Last time, 2 days ago we played?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Every drive was good.
Ah, yesterday.
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 Every kind of drive off together, the tee box was good.
Thank you.
Pickleball game's good.
Thank you.
Tennis game is good. She's very coachable.
Yeah, I like being coachable. Oh, yeah.
Simone is.
You could work with her a little bit on her tennis game. It's a little up high, maybe more low to high.
Okay.
She takes the ball a little up high. That's maybe just tracking. That's just reps, right? If you're listening, again, it's been Into the Blue Zone, a plant-based production with special guest Mike Stevenson.